Hi, hello, and welcome to the Sex Sells Podcast. This is your host, Eliza. If you're new here, this is a podcast about sex, dating, relationships, culture, and psychology. Today's podcast is sponsored by Perceive Events. That's PERSEVE Events. Like, think of it like personalized events, but it's kind of combined personalized events into one word. This is a beautiful business that is run by my beautiful friend, Annabelle. You would have heard me tell lots of all my funny stories about friends are usually about Annabelle on this podcast. However, she runs an organization, runs a business, sorry, that does events within workplaces. So if you have a workplace, you can arrange an event for her, whether it be like a team bonding day, a lunch, a fancy event, all of these things. Have a look at her website. I highly recommend it. I'll put it in the show notes. Also, one of the aspects you can do on her with her business is she has a whole bunch of collaborators. So you can kind of like custom tailor an event with her where she has people that work with her, like yoga teacher, Pilates teacher, drag queens, or team building facilitators like me. So if you're in Sydney and you would like an event, reach out to her on her Instagram. I will put it in the show notes. Highly recommend it. And maybe I will be coming to get your work to pay for me to come there. And I will do a beautiful training with you guys, and I'm sure you will all get a lot out of it. And I will be advocating, sure as fuck advocating, for the best workplace outcomes that we can get as possible. I was talking to a client the other day, and we were talking about how she isn't allowed to put anything on her desk. Absolutely nothing. Not a photo, not a fucking like cup with pens in it. Nothing on the desk. She's not even allowed a desktop picture. Like, it's just so whack. And the reason we came to this conversation is we were exploring like what makes you feel like cozy and safe, because work is a really big trigger for her and a really big point of stress for her. So we identified that she really likes plants and artwork and mood lighting. And I was like, oh, I love this. In my old office, when I worked for an organization, I had plants on my desk. I had salt lamps. I had crystal. I had a really big desk, books, little decorations, everything. I even had a candle, but then I got in trouble for that one. So whoopsie. But the point is, anytime I sat at my desk, and not to mention my stationery was just gorgeous, which I liked. Every time I sat at my desk, I felt good. And anytime someone would come up to me at my desk, they would always say, I love coming to your desk. It's so gorgeous. I always feel so good. It's like a little cozy corner. So I was talking to her about this, and she was like, well, I'm not allowed to do anything. And I was like, shit, I got to send you this email that I sent to my work, because my work back in the day, when I worked at this organization, tried to implement no decorations or whatever in case of a client coming through. It was too personalized. They learn more about you and blah, blah, blah. So I wrote like I'm not even exaggerating, like an 8-page essay with like all the researched evidence about how having decorated work desks actually increases our capacity for work, our work performance, colleagues' level of happiness. There's so many benefits to it, and almost zero benefits to not having a personalized desk. So I also recommend, if you're sitting at desk at work and you're there 8 hours a day, multiple days a week, and it's just plain and boring as shit, do something about it. Like, get something there. It makes a huge difference. And if it doesn't, whatever, it looks good. So I would recommend that, definitely. I've been really enjoying working with you guys. I've got a lot of all my clients are from the podcast, which has been amazing. I am working 7 days a week now. every evening and weekends. So I will try and introduce a little bit of work-life balance soon, but it's just while I've been kind of on a roll with it, I've been going with it and it's been really enjoyable. I'm loving seeing all the positive outcomes as well for my clients. And it's been, yeah, it's just been really nice. And I like every single client I work with, I genuinely like. And if I didn't like it, I wouldn't even say the sentence at all. But there is not one client where I'm like, oh, I got to see this guy. I like them all. And I love, like, all my clients are so there, ready to show up for themselves, ready to learn, ready to put in work. We have beautiful heart-to-hearts and a lot of educational psychoeducation as well, which I think is amazing. If you looked at my website a while back and you would have seen there were a lot of like packages that were specifically tailored, like here's a package for dealing from heartbreak, here's a package for building self-esteem and confidence, boundaries, assertiveness, here's a package for processing trauma, overcoming personal barriers, and then a lot of couples packages, blah, 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 blah. I have now changed things, so please keep this in mind because a lot of people were messaging me and emailing me saying, I don't know which package applies to me. And I kept being like, well, I end up doing a tailored package for almost everyone anyway. So the way it works now is I have a 1 month, a 2 month, and a 3 month therapeutic coaching package that you can work with me, or program that you can work with me through. And I'll get through this really quick, guys, just in case for people that are curious, because I do get a lot of messages about this. And I need to have like a, I want to make it personalized so I don't have like a stock standard copy and paste response that I send, but it takes a really long time to explain it. So I'm often sending, someone will send me a message, they've never spoken to me before in their life, and I'm sending them back 13 voice notes explaining it. I've put a lot more details on my website, so that might help. And I put a fax as well, like frequently asked questions, FAQ. I don't know why I said fax, but oh, do we call them fax or just FAQs? I don't know. But yeah, so I've got those three, 1 month program, 2 month program, and a 3 month program. So the 1 month program, if you have like a specific outcome or goal that is quite like 1 to 2 barriers maximum, for example, like I want to build my self-esteem and I want to put boundaries in place, great. The 2 month program is if you're like, okay, I'm ready to like really learn all these things, I have a lot to unpack, I've got a lot to process, I want to know about how you know, my childhood impacted me, where I learned these narratives, how I got these core beliefs, what my values are, what my blind spots are, what my barriers are. So there will be parts of that program that you come to me saying like, I really want to, you know, develop my self-esteem, or I want to heal, I want to manage my depression and anxiety and those kind of things. And then another big part that would be like, you know, 30 to 50% of it, but the rest of it is actually things that I identify and I lead, and really getting my clients to have an extremely deep understanding of self, because I think that that is where a lot of healing comes from. And if you follow me on Instagram, occasionally I post like client testimonials, and so often they're responding to me or messaging me, my clients, saying like, I can't believe I've been in therapy for this long or seen this many psychologists or counselors, and I've had, no one's ever mentioned these things to me that you have, like no one has ever even breached them, or I've never even talked about my childhood, or these things haven't come up because it's been led by them. So I'm a really big advocate for, yes, unpacking, yes, providing a safe and nurturing spot for you to like talk about what you're experiencing, but also providing, here are the actual strategies you can do, and not just that, but why we need to do them, how they work. And if that's not going to fit and vibe with your personality, or you're not a fan of that, I will find 10 other things for you to do that are going to be healing and are going to be effective. And it's not just about putting strategies in place. That's like 20% of it. A lot of it is unpacking and understanding and healing it from the origin. So that is that package. And then the 3 month package is a 12 week program, obviously. And it is for those people that are looking for a complete overhaul of life. Like they don't understand themselves on the level they should. they're struggling, they're not living life in alignment to themselves, they're feeling lost, they're feeling confused, they're feeling depressed, they're feeling anxious. There's so much there that needs unpacking, processing, healing, motivating, educating. Like, it's a complete, like, let's build you from ground up towards a new and better life. So that is that final package. Of course, I am, as you may or may not know, actually, I am 6 months pregnant. So if that 12-week package is appealing to you, I will only be taking clients on for like literally 2 more weeks, and then I will no longer be taking clients for a 12 or 3 month package. I will only be doing the 2 month and 1 month until I have this baby, and then I'll be back into it. So those are the individual one-on-one coaching. And then I also have couples coaching packages, which is a 1 month and a 2 month package. And the 1 month one is a few sessions where we can do, for example, the premarital coaching and counseling, learning skills such as conflict resolution, improving conflict, confidence, boundary assertion and assertion, and asserting our needs, all these things, connection building. And then the 2 month package is like, okay, let's build this connection from you. You've both, you know, decided that you're committed into this relationship. Let's build this connection, really develop it, get you as close and as intimate as you possibly can. So we'll go through all aspects of your relationship: intimacy, communication, conflict, needs, boundaries, future goals, everything you can, so that you will never need after this. You will have everything you need, basically, in order to sustain and have a very healthy and loving, fulfilling relationship going forward. I had a couple of people email me saying, like, I'm actually in a good relationship, but I am curious about this and seeing, like, what can we set up and what can we put in place, and can we learn more about each other through this program? Absolutely. I have said to my clients time, I do have a lot of clients that come to me in, like, they're in absolute crisis. And if that is you, I would recommend 100% at minimum a 2 month program, probably a 3 month program. But some of my other clients come to me where they're actually doing really well, but they've been curious about working with me. They just want to see what comes up. And sometimes that's the best place to be, where you're in an okay spot. You're not out of your window of tolerance. You're not dysregulated. You're not in fight or flight. So it's easier to take information in. When you are dysregulated, and a lot of my clients that are and come to me in that crisis situation, that's absolutely fine. It just means that primarily and initially our focus is on creating feelings of safety and calmness within you so that we can talk and process together, which can be a really beautiful and healing process within itself. So those are my programs. Reach out. And the last thing actually I will say on this is, I do have, for couples and for individuals, a one-off session available. So someone messaged me once being like, I won't give the details, but something crazy happened to them and they don't need support. Generally, they're actually quite, they're doing well in life. They don't need any, they're not interested in self-development or healing or process, whatever. But there was one event that happened and they needed to talk to someone about it, and they needed to like really just get it out, debrief and process. So you can book me for like just a single 2 hours to talk about those things and make a plan together and put things in place or whatever. So that's that, guys. I kind of have just, the only reason I want to talk about it is just to be conscious of, I am pregnant. So when I have this baby, I have zero plans and ideas of what I'm going to be doing, like how soon afterwards I'll be getting back to work. I know Adrian's taking his long service leave, so maybe it'll be easier, and maybe it will be, okay for me to go straight back in and be like, okay, well, he only has to hold the baby for like an hour and a bit at a time, or an hour and a half, a couple of hours, that's fine. But I don't know. I used to say with Remy, I'll be back within a few months to work, and it was like a year and a half, and I was like, I can't. I think it'll be different this time around though. So yes, I hope that is helpful. The other thing I will say, very last off, A lot of you guys messaged me about my podcast with Matt from Men with Manners, and a lot of people loved it. Found it confronting at times, but funny at times, and educational times, informative. And so many people were like, "You and Matt have a great vibe. I really enjoyed this podcast. It was great to have a male and female perspective that are different but yet still align and still have the same ultimate goals." So we are bringing out in the next week, this week or next week, I'm not sure. I'm seeing Matt today. We will be releasing a 6-week program. Stay tuned. If you're not following me on Instagram, please do follow me on Instagram to get information on this. For this program, we'll be doing more in the future, I'm sure. But this program is specifically for single males, because both Matt and I mean, this is literally Matt's niche, but we both get a lot of messages and emails and communication from men that listen to us or follow us, asking for advice about women or approaching people for dating. And not necessarily just women, but approaching people in general for dating. Or how do I cope with rejection? How do I get out of my head? How do I actually walk up to someone? Like, what's okay? What's not okay? What's appropriate? When I walk up to a woman, what do I say? What do I do? Can I touch her? Can I hug her? Can I, you know, all of these things. So we're going to be doing a very extensive program. It's a group program. I'm really excited about it. And it's going to be unpacking a lot of these things about giving you strategic tools, but also about a lot of the importance of this program as well is going to be working on things like your self-esteem, your confidence, your limiting self-beliefs and narratives that you have around dating that are holding you back, and basically what's going to be working for you and what's not going to be working for you. So stay tuned for that. There's also a lot of opportunities in that to get one-on-one personalized advice, a whole breakdown for you on like planning on how, what, when to approach, etc. Dating profile reviews, one-on-one sessions. You can do a session, for example, with Matt to talk about, okay, I want to get a plan on how I can walk up to a woman and approach her and date her, and you can do a plan with me, a session with me about how can I want to heal my low self-esteem. I want to build confidence, all these kind of things. So stay tuned. Follow me on Instagram or Men with Manners on Instagram as well. That will be coming out in the next couple of days. Send me a message if you're interested in case you miss it on my Instagram, and I can send you the information when it comes out. And I will say this in case it's not obvious. It's not a free workshop. It is a paid workshop, but a very worthwhile investment, I think. We get the best of both worlds. You have two experts, a male and a female, and both of us have very aligned views on dating and sex appeal and intimacy and approaching. So I think that it's going to be really, really valuable for a lot of people. And both of us have a very significant idea of what it is that you guys are struggling with. And it's none of this pickup artistry bullshit that doesn't actually get you anywhere. All right, I'm going to move on now. I'm sorry. That was so fucking long. Please don't hate me. Okay, I'm moving on now to a juicier conversation. This can be helpful for you, especially if you're in a relationship, but also if you're single. I think it's good to keep in your back pocket and know this as well. Either way, it's going to be juicy, and I'm going to be discussing relationship dynamics that are killing your sex drive. I love it. I haven't talked about sex and intimacy and libido in a really long time. It's been very like psych heavy recently. So thanks for sticking through that. Although I do know, like sometimes I think that style of topic has been more helpful to you guys, which is why I do it. That's one of the ones I get the most feedback on, the most messages about thanking me and stuff like that. So let me know what your thoughts are on this. It's not going to be that deep, obviously. It's just talking about dynamics that kind of like, you know, kill your intimacy and kill your spice and your sex drive. But what I will say is this specifically is about relationship dynamics. I have talked in the past and done podcasts, maybe with Neil, maybe on my own, I can't remember, about, you know, like hormonal changes and coming out of the friend zone and coming out of the honeymoon phase and how that impacts or can impact our sex and relationships and desire and all of these things and being in a long-term relationship. This isn't so much about that. This is more about actual dynamics within your relationship. So I'm going to be leaving the hormone talk for later on or another time or whatever. We will see what comes up today. So I'm going to start hot by, well, actually, I guess it's not hot. Like, what's not hot? But I'm going to start with one that I think is the most important, which inspired me to do this podcast, because I've talked about it a little bit here and there, and I know a lot of people aren't aware of this, yet so many of us fall into this dynamic. Okay, I'm just going to get to it. One of the biggest relationship dynamics that is killing your sex drive and libido and intimacy with your partner is the mother-child dynamic that you have with your romantic partner. And usually what this means is there's one person who takes on a caretaking, nurturing role, and they might be doing more of like the nurturing activities or the caretaking activities like cooking and cleaning and looking after, but also sometimes develop some of those mothering tendencies like directing or strongly suggesting, could you do this? Can you do this? Let's fix this now. And running the household in that way. So that's one person. And then the other side of this dynamic is someone that can be almost revert to like a childlike kicking their feet, being like, I'm too tired to do this. I don't want to do this right now. And I'm going to sit on the couch. I just want to have a beer. I just want a game. I don't want to be nagged right now. And they have a childlike response, but at the same time, they're also dependent on that other person for providing them meals and doing their washing and cleaning and all of these things. So this is a dynamic that is one of the biggest killers of your sex drive, because once someone steps into the role of you can't do shit without me and like I'm doing everything around here, or the other person's thinking this person does not stop nagging me and hassling me and just doesn't let me relax, there is a significant emotional disconnection that is occurring in this dynamic. First of all, emotional connection, disconnection. And secondly, there is a lack of mutual respect. You're losing respect for one another the longer you stay in this dynamic. And it is so common. And I always say, once you become his mother, it's very hard to come back from that. And it is absolutely possible, but it's a massive overhaul and change to the relationship dynamic you have. So when you have this dynamic, the caretaker partner feels burdened by the responsibility of constantly caring for their partner's needs, and that leads to feelings of exhaustion and resentment. And this role reversal inhibits the natural flow of intimacy and connection. Secondly, thirdly, fourthly, I don't know, the dependency and enmeshment that comes from this dynamic as well is particularly difficult, because boundaries can become blurred, you hinder your own personal growth and autonomy, this stifles intimacy, and the relationship loses its sense of separateness and uniqueness, basically, because there are no boundaries in place. Like, okay, I am just expected that I will cook or clean or maintain and do all these things in the household, and you're expected to do, you know, sit back and try to be resistant to doing these things or whatever. And that's the reason why this dynamic is so, obviously we're all making assumptions here and stereotypes that usually it's the woman that tends to fall into that caretaker role, and it's usually the man that falls into the dependent role or the childlike role in a heterosexual relationship. But this happens in all types of relationships. It happens in gay relationships, queer relationships. It can be that role can be, the genders can be reversed in this relationship dynamic as well. So it's definitely something to consider. And the reason why it happens, it comes from an altruistic place initially, where someone's like, oh, well, like, you know, I want to show off to my new man So I'm just assuming, in this scenario, it's a woman that is taking the mothering role. And she's like, I'm going to show off to my new man. I'm going to spoil him. I'm going to have him over. I'm going to make the place beautiful and clean with candles. It's going to be spotless. And I'm going to cook dinner. And then I'm going to be like, just leave your washing here. I'll do it. And you've set up this accidental dynamic that he's like, oh my God, this feels so good. I have not experienced a woman that is this nurturing and compassionate. I love that she looks after me. She loves to feed me. It's so sexy. And it starts off being like this, oof, yes. Then a year down the track, you fucking hate each other for it. Or you don't hate each other, but there is a lot of resentment there. And it builds and builds and builds. So it's really, this is another part of actually why Matt and I are doing this program together. The deciding factor on this, or the leading, aspect of this training is approaching a relationship or a potential romantic connection with pure authenticity, because if you're not willing to stick that out for the remainder of your relationship or forever, assuming that you've met your forever person, then you are setting yourself up and someone else up for disappointment. So some people tend to fall into, like the men will tend to fall into, this is me doing major stereotyping, FYI, of course. Men will tend to fall into the facade of showing confidence and being really social and super affectionate and engaging and all these things. And then as they go later on in the relationship, actually these things may not be accurate. They've just kind of emphasized them or put them on for the sake of showcasing their best selves when they're in that early dating relationship. And women tend to, especially insecure women, have a tendency at times, I've never done this, to kind of be, actually, I'm gonna take that back. Maybe I have done this. We'll see. I don't know. Have kind of got a tendency to be like, showcase themselves as a cool girl and, or what we call now like a pick me girl. And we might be like, yeah, like, fuck, I barely wear makeup. I've never said that, by the way. This is actually not something I align with at all. Or, which is okay if you don't wear makeup and you express that. But it's like, yeah, I don't wear makeup. And like, yeah, I just want to fucking sit on the couch and watch like NRL or whatever you guys watch and drink beers. And yeah, I'd be open to a threesome. And yeah, how hot is my friend? And all of these things. And a guy's like, holy shit, I've just like hit the gold mine. This girl is so cool because she's like acting like a man. acting in a way that is appealing to men, at least initially. And if you're a man listening to this saying that is not appealing, then that's good. I'm happy to hear that. I'm genuinely happy to hear that. I think that's positive. So it's just something that, and I'm saying if she was actually genuinely like this, and I have met women that are for real like this, where they love the sports, they love socializing, they're okay with open relationships, they're okay with having threesomes and sleeping with other people. They're rare, but they're out there. But some women emphasize that, and then it's not actually a true authentic expression of self. And then all of a sudden, a few months in, their boyfriend at this time, they've become committed, and then he mentions like, oh, your friend's kind of hot, because she's been saying that, and that's what she set up. And then she's absolutely heartbroken, gutted, and betrayed at him saying this, and completely let down and shocked that he would say it. But he's like, hang on, we had these conversations at the start all the time. Like, you said you were cool with this. Or maybe it's that, you know, he told her he does party drugs. And she's like, oh, yeah, everyone dabbles in that here and there. So then he goes and does it 6 months into a relationship. And she's like, no, you don't do that when you're with a partner. And it's fine to have that boundary, but it was never expressed. It wasn't an authentic expression at the beginning of the relationship, which is so important. So Matt and I would definitely be deep diving that in our upcoming workshop, etc. And it's really important to know. Anyway, oh my God, sorry. Does me speaking that fast get stressful for other people? I genuinely would like to know, because I listen to podcasts. One of my new clients told me, which was really nice, that he doesn't like listening to podcasts because he finds people very annoying to listen to, but he likes listening to my podcast. And I was like, wow, what an honor. But I actually resonate with this a lot because I struggle listening to people that on podcasts, not in real life, don't fret. I struggle listening to people in podcasts that talk really slowly. And it fucking kills me. So I know that I am a fast talker. In fact, I enrolled myself in 2 workshops recently. So one of them, she was, this is just like educational things, like trainings. And one of them, she talked so slowly on, I couldn't listen. I just had to give up. She was just too slow. And the other one was like a million miles an hour, like da 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 da. And I loved it. It's like, yes, this is the speed I need. So someone tell me, like, if that, I just think back to 45 seconds ago and think, shit, I was just rambling so fast there. I wonder if that invigorates stress in anyone. If so, I'm sorry. I am curious though. Please let me know. Send me a message on Instagram. That's the best way. Okay, so the mother-child dynamic. There is a lack of mutual respect. There's the dependency and enmeshment. There's the role reversal. There's the emotional disconnection. And then because of this, the nurturing partner starts to perceive their partner as more of a dependent child than a romantic equal. So that leads to a loss of attraction and sexual desire. So there you go. 31 minutes in. I've got through one. Fuck. Okay. You may not be able to tell, actually. Or maybe you can, but I've been up since 2 o'clock this morning due to some little delinquent teenagers outside my house that I was paranoid were going to break in, and I could not get back to sleep. One of the big parts of pregnancy is insomnia. So once you're awake, you're up. So I am like at that point where you're overtired. You're so overtired that you're wired, if you relate. Okay, so another dynamic beyond the mother-child dynamic that can kind of inhibit intimacy is the avoidance and pursuit dynamic. So this dynamic involves usually a partner that is seeking closeness and connection, and they are the pursuer. And if you're really like into attachment styles, this would be the anxious attachment person. So the anxious attachment person, or just the pursuer or whatever, is seeking constantly closeness and connection. And the other person is consistently withdrawing or avoiding intimacy. And as you can probably tell, they are the avoidant person. So this pattern leads to feelings of rejection and frustration, often from both ends or especially from one end. And that ultimately hinders emotional and thereby later potentially physical intimacy as well. So it's definitely something to consider if you're in this dynamic, because the thing is if you are the pursuer, it's obviously not sexy to be getting rejected, and it's not hot and doesn't feel good, and it's not liberating or sexy or spicy to have someone that is constantly withdrawing and avoiding intimacy, even though that's desperately what you want. And then because you're so eager for that closeness and connection, your avoidant partner gets turned off by the clingy energy or the desperation energy. And I talked about this with my client recently, where I was reading messages between him and a woman, and I was like, we have to be conscious of as well, like the energy that you give out in these messages. There's a lot of different things, but one aspect of it is like the desperation aspect or the clinginess aspect of it. And that is an energy that can repel people, especially avoidant people, more than anyone. So some people find that appealing. I personally have always found that kind of like a little bit appealing. Like maybe that's like a unhealthy thing. But when someone is very active in like pursuing me or something, or like messaging me lots and very willing to showcase their attraction or feelings or talk about that lots, that does not feel like a burden to me. I love it. I'm like, feed me more. So don't, if you have that personality type, don't feel like you have to change that. You just have to find someone that really vibes with and meshes with that. Okay. Another dynamic, criticism and defensiveness. Good Lord, some people just have this, it's really hard when you're in a relationship, especially a long-term relationship actually, where you've developed a lot of trust and respect for one another and you also live together and you don't have to kind of, I mean, assuming you live together, you don't have to pay so much attention and put so much meaning on like, we're out of the habit of being polite to one another. We can just express ourselves because we're living so authentically and we feel so safe with this person. But what often happens in this dynamic is that we become critical of the other person and we don't hold back in expressing that because we no longer fear the outcome. We no longer fear judgment as much or fear a consequence or whatever, because you're like, we've been together for, you know, 10, 20 years, 5 years or whatever. Like, I can express these things. But then what ends up happening is we express it and we express it and we express it over and over and over again. And all of a sudden your partner's like, I can't go a day without feeling criticized and I'm not good enough and all these things. And the partner that is doing the criticizing is thinking, oh, like, I thought we were just kind of having this beautiful open communication ongoing. I didn't realize that this was problematic. So the other thing as well is that when one person becomes critical, often the other person becomes defensive. And both of those dynamics are pissing each other off. The critical person is like, I just want to be able to express something with you, to you, without you shutting me down and without you being defensive about it and denying it or blame shifting. And then that person is like, I just want to go a day without you telling me what's wrong with me. So this dynamic erodes trust and emotional safety. So that obviously kills intimacy and desire. Okay, stonewalling, this is a big one. I haven't talked about stonewalling in a while, but it's very common. It is more common for women to stonewall, actually. Actually, you know what? I take that back. I would say it's equal, because I was going to say it's more common with women because that's just a bias that I've created based on the fact that a lot of the women that I work with come to me because they struggle with asserting their needs and boundaries. But not every woman does. Many women are like, you know, will go off at you and put you in your place or whatever. But that's just the bias I created. That's probably not 100% accurate saying it's mostly women. It's just because I work specifically with women that are learning how to hold their own and stand up for themselves and, you know, engage in conversations that may be intimidating or maybe relational conflict, etc. So stonewalling is when someone withdraws from connection and then shuts down completely. However, this is the reason why it's equally common with men is because a lot of men feel they're conditioned or they're uncomfortable or they're not used to expressing and sharing their emotions. And so when something goes on, they kind of shut down and they're like, no, I'm not going to listen to this. Or they just are so overwhelmed, they can't even comprehend. So they go dead silent. And that's, that is stonewalling, where you're like, nothing is going to come through, nothing is getting through, and I'm not going to contribute anything. And sometimes it's a flight or fight response as well. So it's not always like a sinister, like, no, fuck you, I'm not contributing to this conversation. Sometimes it's like pure overwhelm and unconscious fear that we're experiencing. But this behavior prevents meaningful conversations and resolutions. So then you feel isolated and you feel disconnected, and therefore, bang, your sex drive is gone. Your intimacy and attraction to one another can be severely impacted. Every time I say, and bang, your sex drive is gone, I'm exaggerating, and the real thing will be a slow erosion over time, and it's just something to be cautious of. Okay. Entitlement and resentment. So if one person feels entitled to certain privileges or expects the other, their partner, to meet their needs without reciprocation, it's going to breed resentment and imbalance in the relationship. So this dynamic can absolutely erode the mutual respect and the collaboration aspect of a relationship. So this can just be like when you're like, there's double standards. How come she's allowed to go out till 3 a.m. in the morning partying with her girls and I'm not allowed to even go out past midnight? Those kind of double standards that are common in relationships or come up in relationships can be really impactful. And it's something you're like, oh, you don't realize that it's impactful. You don't make that connection or you don't draw to the fact that it's actually impacting your intimacy because you're like, well, this is something that we go through, like we argue about once a month. But it absolutely is. And intimacy and desire is a very unique and fickle experience at times. So, yeah, it's interesting to know about. Like when people come to me or clients come to me or couples come to discuss their intimacy and desire and building their libido. I worked on a client with this recently and it was more about creating sensations of safety for her because she couldn't get out of fight or flight mode. So obviously her body is like, no, you cannot, this is not a time for you to procreate, even though she had no intention of procreating. That's just the biological function. But for a lot of clients that come to me about this, I'm like, okay, I know that you said you want to work on intimacy, but we're going to have to do a whole like unpacking and exploration of the dynamics that are in place here and figure out where this could be stemming from. It's not simple as like, oh, if you just have 3 cups of spinach at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you'll feel super horny all night. Like, it's not how it works. You got to heal it from the source and then things will fall into place afterwards. And by the way, with that client, she messaged me the next day, bless her soul. I gave her all these, we worked a lot on regulation, safety techniques, calming techniques, whatever. And then she messaged me being like, yep, we had sex the next day or that night, which was beautiful. I love to hear that. Okay. Competitive comparisons. So when you are comparing your relationship to someone else or someone else's relationship, you're creating a sense of insecurity or building into narratives that you may have about inadequacy. So instead of fostering connection, which is what you should be doing, you're instead having a dynamic that fuels jealousy and defensiveness, which drives people apart. So you might be saying like, well, Bob and Sue, like they do this 3 times a week and he takes her out for dinner and he buys her flowers and he does this. That shit, it's like you don't need to use a comparison in order to express your needs. And it's very, very tempting to do so, to be like, hey, like, you know, I've noticed that this guy does this for his girlfriend and that's what I want. Or they'll send you a reel on Instagram or something. And, well, he's like, well, his wife cooks for him every single night. Like those kind of things. It's not helpful. If you just want more romance in your relationship, learn to ask for more romance. And if you ask for that and your partner says no, or they shut that down, the ball's in your court. Like, what are you going to do with that information? Are you going to accept it? Or are you going to be like, okay, well, we're incompatible. So we either need to work through this because I value romance, or we need to break up. So what would you like to do? Hopefully they want to work through it. Okay. Emotional neglect, of course. When one or both partners fail to prioritize emotional connection and support, it leads to feelings of loneliness and dissatisfaction. So this is something that we can do intentionally, but also accidentally. Like if you're chronically overworking and you're really busy and things are going on and you just lack that connection that you once had where you used to sit down and instead you come home, you're both exhausted, you get dinner or takeaway and then you watch your favorite show together and then you go to bed and you kind of feel good about it because you enjoy your dinner and you enjoy your show, but you're not having those one-on-one conversations and that connection that is really important to maintain. You got to keep watering it like, you know, it's a plant. You got to look after it. So when that happens, it is emotional neglect, whether or not it's intentional or malicious or not. But it chips away at intimacy and it leaves partners feeling disconnected and unfulfilled and they don't know why. And, well, that's the reason why. Okay. And of course, I will finish it on this one. I had a whole list of things, but I've been going on for a while now. But I'll finish it on this one as a relationship dynamic, I guess, and that's infidelity and betrayal. So this is pretty obvious, but acts of infidelity and betrayal can genuinely shatter your trust and intimacy in relationship. And being intimate after a betrayal requires extensive work on rebuilding trust, addressing the underlying issues, fostering open connection, all of these things. So what sometimes happens occasionally is that you have like this this phenomena called hysterical bonding. And it's when perhaps we find out like, oh, I might lose my partner because I've slept with someone else. Let's say she slept with another man. And all of a sudden you have this primitive sexual urge to reclaim her or have this amazing intimacy with her. And you do. And you're both like, yes. She's like, I'm so sorry I fucked up. But wow, this is amazing. Like, look at this reconnection. And for like a week or two, you're like, wow, like, this is, maybe there was a silver lining. Maybe this was meant to happen. And then a week passes and you start to process it and you're like, I can't even look at you. I don't want to touch you. I can't cope with the betrayal. This hysterical bonding is something that is innate in us. It is a primitive biological drive to maintain our mates when we feel like they've been at threat or something. So it's natural to have that instinct when you've been betrayed to kind of like reclaim your partner or have that confirmation of connection. And then when you get it, you're like, now I'm going to process this and now I'm going to realize I was severely betrayed and let down and upset, etc. So yeah, keep that in mind. If you have experienced infidelity or betrayal, this is really one of those things that no matter what or how you process it, even for myself as someone that has studied for 10 years and done a lot of, you know, studied relationship counseling and works with clients, and I feel like I know so much about relationship counseling. If I were ever to experience infidelity and betrayal and I had the intention on staying with that partner, I don't think I would, but let's say hypothetically, maybe I would, who knows, stay with this partner, I would without a doubt, 10,000% seek counseling for it. Because this is one of those things that can trickle into your, you can heal from it. And then 2 years later, you're triggered again, or 3 years, or 10 years, or 20 years. And every single time you have to process it, heal it, and go through it all over again. And it is a dynamic that can be scary to approach. It can be taxing. It can affect both partners. One of you just wants to be able to move on from this. And the other one is like, I want to move on, but I can't, because every time I see you interact with a woman, I get triggered, or whatever. So, yeah. I hope that's been helpful. I hope that's been interesting. If you'd like to work with me, I'll put my Instagram and website in the show notes. But other than that, I will see you all. I will be doing a mini episode. I think I'm going to be doing a mini. I know I spoke in my last episode and I can't remember what it was or when I said it, but I was like, oh, I'm going to talk about that next week. And I've already forgotten what it was. Oh, I think it was actually how to take action. I'm going to do that at some point, but I have had a very insistent request on talking about you're the nice guy that's been rejected, basically. Like when you're like the perfect boyfriend and then she breaks up with you because of attraction. So I will be doing a mini ep on that, I think, in the next day or so. So stay tuned. And other than that, I shall see you all in a few days. Bye.